Chapter 18. The Galactic Alliance is in turmoil this morning, as more planets withdraw representatives from the Senate in protest at fighting in the Corellian blockade. Atzeri's ambassador to the Alliance described the destruction of one of its freighters as an act of war. Chief of State Cal Omus told HNE earlier that the exclusion zone would remain in place until Corellia disarmed, and that the Atzeri vessel had opened fire after repeated warnings. There has been no response from Corellia's president, Thraken Sal Solo. HNE Morning Bulletin. Lumia's apartment, safe house, Galactic City. Jason rubbed his eyes, trying to erase the dream he'd had on the flight back from Corellia, and that was still vivid in his mind. He hoped it was a dream and not a vision. As the turbolift climbed to the 300th floor of the apartment tower, he tried to shake the image from his mind and failed. In the dream, he was staring at his hands, lightsaber clutched in one, sobbing. "That's what you dream of when you send your own sister for court-martial. Deal with it." No, he wasn't proud of what he'd done to Jaina, but it had to be done. He let the misery wash over him, and didn't flinch from it as he opened the doors of Lumia's safe house apartment with a brief focus of force energy. Inside was a surprisingly comfortable suite of rooms, scattered with objects that he thought he recognized from her asteroid habitat. She'd been back home to pick up a few things. Somehow, he hadn't thought of her as needing material trappings.
"You're very upset," she said, emerging from another room. Jason was startled by her appearance. "Your grandfather found me drifting in my starfighter after Luke Skywalker had fired on it and left me for dead. Vader saved me. So my life is inextricably linked with your family. Did you know that?"
"You see that as destiny?"
"Inevitability, which is why you should stop feeling guilty about your sister.
I'm having bad dreams about it. I wasn't expecting that."
"Do you want them to stop?"
"No. They are what they are. I have to embrace them."
"Be sure you know the fine line between dreams and visions. They may tell you what you need to know, what I can't tell you."
"Which is?"
"How you progress from where you are now to what you have to become. I can guide you in techniques, but their application must come from you."
Jason sat down, careful not to touch any artifacts in case one had a use he didn't yet know.
"This is what I don't understand. I spent over 5 years perfecting my use of the Force, learning techniques from all species, not just the Jedi way. What more can there be? Where does a Jedi adept end and a Sith begin? You see, I never really believed that it was purely a line between good and evil. Some days I can't even define those terms."
"It's acceptance," said Lumia. "The willingness to surrender to what the Force asks of you. To stop denying it by rationalizing denial as self-discipline and avoidance of powerful emotions."
"That sounds as if I should simply do the first thing that comes into my mind."
"You already know you should."
"Why am I different from my grandfather, then? The more I do, the more I feel I'm doing exactly as he did. Was it really only his preoccupation with his wife that stopped him achieving order?"
"He started his training too late, and was still inexperienced when he was exploited by a man who wanted power. You're a mature man with a lifetime's training, and nobody is using you. You won't make the same mistakes."
"It can't be that easy."
"It won't be. It'll be painful."
"More painful than turning on your own sister?"
"Oh, yes.
That's my destiny?"
"That's the price you pay for bringing order to the galaxy. This is your sacrifice. Now do you see why weak men like Palpatine saw only power, and why they were defeated?"
Lumia's hypnotic voice was almost disembodied. Jason watched her mouth and had no sense of being spoken to by another living being. It was an oracle,
a dispassionate revelation. "There is nothing in it for you as Jason Solo."
He'd lied. There were worse things already than suspending Jaina. There was the look on Ben Skywalker's face when he saw Aelin Habur's body. He'd gone too far invading the woman's mind. She hadn't been up to the physical strain. He wouldn't make that mistake again, but Ben's trust in him had taken a body blow. The boy still didn't understand that doing things his father's way led to an endless cycle of war and chaos. Luke wouldn't face the need to take extreme measures. Luke wanted to feel good about himself. That was attachment.
"How do you feel when you see Luke Skywalker now?"
he asked.
"I feel nothing," said Lumia. "I only remember."
"What should I do next?"
"I can't tell you. Deal with what troubles you most."
"My apprentice, Ben. He's wavering."
"Don't seek his approval."
"I don't."
"Don't set an example and hope that he'll follow it. Put him in a position where he has to discover the truth for himself."
She was, as she had been at Bimiel, painfully right. Ben had to learn what his father never had, that there were necessary evils. And there was no better place to learn than in the Galactic Alliance Guard. Emergency Management Complex under Cabin Park, Coronet, Corellia. For a couple of old guys, Han thought, he and Fett were keeping up with the girl pretty well. Then he realized that the underground passage sloped downhill. The corridor that ran from Sal Solo's presidential suite to the emergency management bunker stretched for a kilometer under Cabin Park. All they had to do was keep running. What happened after that, Han had no idea, but it wasn't the first time he'd run headlong and trusted to his instincts and luck. Besides, he was with Boba Fett. That man could escape anything.
"Where does this come out?"
Han panted. "Leads into the bunker complex, then two exits out of there to the surface."
"Two."
"Two exits are always better than one." A long way behind, but not far enough, pounding boots echoed. They were now in a dimly lit tunnel with a hard-tiled floor and large stenciled signs every few meters with helpful messages like, "Got your respirator?" and "Secure all doors, your life may depend on it."
"We're not going to run into company ahead, are we?"
"Not unless we're really unlucky." Fett pounded along behind Myrta. "They only staff these places in civil emergencies."
"Like a war?"
"Yeah, that'd qualify." Myrta had her hand blaster held at shoulder level as she sprinted, a testimony to the benefits of unfashionably flat boots and sensible clothing.
"They'll have a real emergency on their hands if they get in the way."
Doors ahead of them opened automatically, and bright lights flared into life on the ceiling. If this was all set to trigger when staff entered, then they had to be alone down here, or the lights would already be on. Alone except for the guards chasing them, of course. Had to be guards. Han was tuned to the sound of guards' boots. Fett came to a halt as they entered a lobby with six doors leading from it. Three were marked Traffic Control, Water and Power, and Central EM Cell. The other three weren't marked at all.
"Which one?" said Han.
Myrta stepped behind them, blaster sweeping an arc while Fett froze. Han realized he was focusing on some display in his helmet's HUD. "Two exits via the main EM room here, but if we get stuck, there are hatches to accessible vents from the other rooms." He indicated his jetpack.
"I don't do vents."
"EM room, here we come."
The running footsteps behind were much, much louder now. A bolt of blaster fire spattered plaster 10 meters from them. Fett broke off and extended his left arm, sending a long jet of flame down the passage behind them that made a loud ha-womp sound and blew billows of gray smoke back at them.
Curses and shouts rang down the passage. The flamethrower had slowed their pursuers, but not stopped them.
"Move it," said Fett.
The EM door didn't open automatically. Myrta hit the heel of her hand on the square red key at the side a couple of times, and the doors parted. They were already halfway into the room before Han realized that it was full of desks in rows, with comlinks on each of them. The walls were covered completely in holomaps and display boards. The place was ready to handle whatever disaster hit Coronet when the warning siren sounded. A bewildered man in a white shirt looked up from a data pad and stared at them.
"You're early," he said. "We weren't due to staff the... Oh, boy."
A blue streak of blaster fire spat from the doorway, and Han, Fett, and Myrta fired at the same time, driving back two security guards. The man ducked, arms covering his head, while they traded blaster bolts, and Fett shot out the door's lock panel, sending the two halves slamming shut.
"Health and safety inspection," said Han, as the terrified man flattened himself against the wall. "Keep up the good work."
They burst through one of two doors marked emergency exit, and were back in a yellow-lit corridor again, running for their lives. It sloped uphill. Han really noticed that now. His thigh muscles screamed for a rest. Behind them, there was the sound of blaster bolts smashing through doors and the pounding of those boots again. The guards didn't give up easily.
"Your jetpack isn't going to be much use to you down here, pal," said Han.
Fett didn't break his pace. He got to the end of the passage and spun around, nearly knocking Han against the wall. Then he bent forward at 90 degrees to the ground, hunched his shoulders, and tapped at the panel on his left forearm.
"You reckon?"
he said, breathless.
"Mind the backwash, Salome."
A swoosh of hot air and a blinding flash of yellow light nearly flattened Han as the small missile on Fett's jetpack skimmed the back of his helmet and shot down the corridor, trailing vapor. The explosion deafened him for a few seconds. Fett grabbed his shoulder and shoved him ahead.
"You know how much these MM-9s cost," Fett grumbled.
Han's ears were ringing.
"There's got to be safety regulations on that thing."
But he could hear the thuds and cracks of falling rubble. They ran. Ahead, a patch of light that was brighter than the yellow gloom of the tunnel kept Han running at an automatic animal level. Escape. Just escape. Worry about everything else later. He'd expected Myrta to be halfway across the park by now, but she was standing by the exit doors, pumping blaster fire into them until they parted. Cool evening air washed into the musty passage. The tunnel emerged in the slope of another artificial hill on the far side of the park.
"All clear," she said. "Go on, run."
Myrta didn't strike him as the type to care whether he lived or died. But like Fett, she had her reasons for wanting him in one piece. Fett could have left them both stranded and escaped with his jetpack, but he didn't let Han out of his sight.
"Call your wife," said Fett. "Get her to pick us up. We can't run all over Coronet at this time of night. Too conspicuous."
They crouched in the cover of thick bushes near the highway, and for a second Han had one of those out-of-body views of himself in his mind that sometimes left him reeling. Three Mandalorian assassins, fully armored, hiding from the Corellian security force in a nice, normal park, as a government coup began a kilometer away. He opened the comlink.
"What am I doing here?"
"Hi, honey," said Han. "Can you give us a lift?"
Leia's voice was, as usual, all resigned calm.
"Who's us?"
"Some Mandalorian buddies I ran into."
"That's nice. I'm watching a lot of police activity from the apartment."
"Ah, that'd be Cousin Thrakken."
"How is he?"
"Dad," said Han, his stomach torn between nausea and a lifetime's worth of relief. "Very, very dead."
GAG Headquarters, Galactic City, Coruscant. "What happened to Barrett Tsai?"
Ben asked.
Shevu consulted the custody file and shook his head.
"Not here. No record of transfer to CSF custody, either."
"But every prisoner should be logged in and out, right?"
"Right."
Shevu stared at his data pad, lips compressed in a thin line.
"I don't like prisoners who disappear."
He managed a smile at Ben.
"Maybe he was repatriated and nobody logged him out. We sent back a lot of Corellians in a hurry before the blockade."
"Yeah."
"It's hard when you get personally involved," said Shevu quietly. "Best to stand clear and do everything by the book."
"Jason doesn't.
Colonel Solo is my commanding officer."
It wasn't an answer that made any sense on the surface, but Ben was learning fast. Shevu was saying that he wouldn't give an opinion on Jason's behavior, whatever he thought of it. He was angry about Aelin Habur. Ben was distressed, too. Jason was all he wanted to be, and then suddenly he killed a prisoner. Carelessly, not in anger, but she was still dead. And Ben wasn't sure he knew him as well as he'd thought he did.
"Is this what I want to be?"
"I understand," said Ben, and went off to the now-empty gymnasium to practice his lightsaber skills with a remote as a target. The small sphere danced and spun in the air as he swung and sliced, leaving a faint trail of light behind the blue blade with each stroke. When he became swept up in the movement and stopped concentrating, he always found himself on the edge of one perfect movement after another. It didn't feel like a series of actions, it felt like one, his first and last stroke frozen and repeated over and over again. There came a point, as he pursued the darting silver sphere, when his mind was completely blank. Not just clear. Blank. And in those moments he saw things. It was as if his conscious mind had stopped its relentless chatter and left a door wide open. Then his mind wasn't pure white light any longer, but a detailed image, with layers of data that he could understand intuitively, but not read. It stopped him dead in his tracks, the remote responding to him froze in midair. Jason was summoning him. The remote presence of other Jedi was something he had grown up with, the way other kids heard their parents calling them. But this was different. He was being summoned, not called. It was an order. He felt it. He retrieved the remote and ran to find Jason. He could locate him easily these days, as if Jason had an overwhelming presence in the Force, like a signpost when he wanted it. Sometimes, though, he disappeared completely. Ben really wanted to learn to do that, too. Jason was sitting in one of the administration offices, staring at a holomap on the wall, with his hands cupped over his mouth and nose as if he was thinking about something that upset him.
"Jason?"
"Ah, Ben. I wasn't expecting you to come so quickly. I hope I didn't interrupt anything."
"Like I had any choice."
But Jason always treated him like an adult.
"Just lightsaber drill."
"I'm looking at the areas we have to sweep now. We've got a running battle going on between Atzeri and Coruscanti in the lower levels, according to CSF. And the bomb disposal teams are investigating 10 more suspicious packages. We deal with one problem and another 3 spring up in its place."
"What did you want me for?"
Jason indicated a chair and motioned Ben to sit down.
"It's time I gave you more responsibility. We only grow when we're given the chance to."
Ben tried to imagine what extra responsibility he could be given. He had already gone on anti-terror operations and sabotaged weapons that could destroy whole worlds. It was hard to top that when you were 13.
"You can detect weapons and explosives. You're really good at it."
Jason jerked his thumb in the direction of the holomap on the wall.
"Go on. See if you can sense anything by looking at the map." Ben jumped out of the chair and scanned the map. Like most holomaps of Galactic City, it was multi-layered, and he could peel away levels of each grid or dive deep into them by touching the light grid with his finger. He passed his hand above the surface to concentrate on the Force, and found nothing. Perhaps it wasn't on that section of the map. He tapped his finger against the far left of the display, and the map shifted west to take him farther from the Senate building and toward the business districts. He found himself drawn to a quadrant a few kilometers southwest of the Senate, but he sensed nothing specific.
In there somewhere.
Good. Jason stood right behind him and put his hand on his shoulder. Normally that was reassuring, but right then Ben had a sudden memory of Aelin Habur.
Go on.
Something's about to happen.
Ben felt he was being tested.
Do you feel it?
Yes, I do. And the World Brain's Ferals report activity there.
What is it, then?
I want you to work this one out for yourself as part of your training. I'll be there to help you out if you need it. But I think it's time you learn to make decisions. I trust you.
For a few moments, Ben was wildly excited at the trust Jason was placing in him. Then he lapsed back into being torn between fear of failing and remembering Aelin Habur.
"Do you trust me, Ben?"
Jason asked suddenly.
Of course I do.
Tell me the truth.
Jason could sense everything. Sometimes he seemed almost telepathic. Ben knew there was no point lying to him, and he didn't want to. He wanted answers.
Okay. I don't understand how you could hurt that woman so badly, he said. You're not a bad person. You don't like violence. It scares me because I don't think I could ever do that. And that means we're different, and I wanted to be just like you. And now I'm not sure.
Jason didn't look upset or offended. It was hard to tell how he had taken the admission.
I can understand that, he said quietly. And we all have to find out for ourselves how far we can go, and what we're prepared to do. You won't know until you have to do it.
Ben wasn't sure that he understood, but he knew he had to go through with this. It couldn't be that different from what he'd been doing for the last couple of weeks. He knew what he could do, and what he wasn't prepared to do. He was certain of that. New black GAG assault vessels, CSF ships in new livery, were waiting for them at the landing pad. Captain Chavu leaned out of the troop bay of the lead ship, hanging on one of the overhead straps with one arm.
"Quadrant H-90's not secure yet," he told Jason. "They've barricaded the skylane intersections with speeders."
Jason jumped up into the bay and hauled Ben aboard.
"Are they still in position?"
"CSF wants a bit of backup before they move. There seem to be a lot of Coruscanti involved."
Jason frowned.
"You sure?"
"Sure. Not every taxpayer here seems to agree with the Alliance line."
Ben pondered that as they rose into the air and banked left to head for H-90. It was an ordinary neighborhood, as far as he knew. Shops, bars, apartments, and a market, with a cosmopolitan population. He'd assumed that it was the non-Coruscanti section that was the source of the growing discord and danger that he'd detected by concentrating on the holomap. It had never occurred to him that the people he thought he was protecting would object to being protected. Every day brought new revelations about the confusing adult world. Just when he thought he'd worked it out, he found he hadn't. Jason and Chavu shouted a conversation above the noise of the drives that filled the open bay. Coruscant lay like a map beneath them, filtered slightly by haze.
"It started when CSF arrested someone for painting anti-government slogans on the local Galactic City Authority offices, sir. There is a full riot squad deployed now."
"Any more incidents?"
Shevu paused and put his hand to his ear, concentrating on his comlink earpiece.
20 public order arrests. No serious casualties. Pretty quiet.
Worse to come, though, Ben? Jason asked. Ben nodded. The wind whipped the legs of his uniform.
Yes.
Shevu simply looked at him with that intense stare that said he preferred hard facts to force impressions. Confronted with that expression, Ben had his doubts, too.
I think that's a safe bet any day of the week, said Shevu.
The assault ship swooped low over a sky lane that was clogged with speeders of all sizes at each intersection. CSF vessels had formed up behind them at a careful distance. The focus of the activity was an apartment block where a noisy protest was taking place. Someone had sprayed "Peace Now" and "Stop Killing Corellia" on the awnings that covered sections of the walkways so that the message was visible from the air. The crowd along the walkways looked like a complete cross-section of species, and when the GAG ship dived lower to observe, it was met with jeers and obscene gestures. For a peace protest, it was getting pretty aggressive. Ben kept an eye out for blasters. The crowd seemed on that edge between simmering down and exploding that he was getting used to seeing. The ship lifted higher and hovered above the CSF line until a speeder bike rose to meet it. The sergeant astride it flipped up his visor as he drew level with the bay.
"Tip off that they might be hoarding weapons somewhere. We're deciding whether to go in and search the area and risk a full-scale armed riot or wait until they get bored and go home."
Jason, Ben, and Shevu surveyed the scene from a safe height.
"Want us to go in?" Jason asked. "We don't have to worry about community relations like you do."
"Yeah, I heard that," the sergeant said warily.
A chant rose up beneath them.
"The Empire's back! The Empire's back!" "Not planning to deploy in white armor, are you? That'd really start them off."
"Very funny," said Shevu.
He lowered his helmet into place, suddenly becoming anonymous behind the shiny black visor.
"Okay, you want us to root out a few?"
Once Ben was physically close to the area, he could feel much more specific disturbances in the force, little whirlpools of threatening darkness. He felt something else now.
"It's big weapons."
"We were kind of hoping for small ones, but—"
Ben could feel a growing anxiety that was almost like itching deep in his ears, so deep that it nearly touched the back of his throat. He was close. He craned his neck and looked out as far as he could from the open bay, hanging on to the safety line.
"I know where they are," he said.
He looked at Jason to confirm his feeling. Jason just looked at him, waiting.
"What do you think?"
"What do you think?"
asked Jason.
"Your call. It feels really dangerous."
"So? Decide. Do we go in or not?" Ben wavered.
"If I'm wrong, we might start a full riot and people might get killed."
Shevu powered up his blaster. The faint whine cut through the rumbling voices and the throb of repulsors.
"Ready when you are, sir."
"You have to make the decision, Ben," Jason said. "You have to decide what you think is right based on the intelligence you have now, and then stand by your actions."
Ben hesitated. He wasn't sure now if Jason would stop him if he thought he was mistaken. He had to make his move.
"That block there,"
said Ben, pointing down at a stack of apartments over a scruffy restaurant.
"Take us in."
Although Ben was sure, almost sure, that he could deal with blaster fire or missiles hurled at him, he was scared. The crowd below loomed larger, some turning and running away as the assault ships closed in, some rushing toward the vessels. At 10 meters, Ben jumped, using the force to stop him smashing into the walkway. People scattered. He heard Jason thud down behind him, and he didn't look back as he ran for the door of the restaurant. Black-suited GAG troopers passed him and secured the doorway, and Ben drew his lightsaber simply because he was operating on blind instinct now. There was nobody in the restaurant. The tables were empty, and he ran between them, heading for a door at the back. Behind him he heard shouting, screams, and blaster fire. He had to be right about this now. He stopped at the doors at the back, not sure whether to force them open, and saw that it was Chavu behind him, not Jason, covering his back, blaster aimed. I can't stop now. Ben opened the doors with a force push and stepped through, lightsaber held in both hands, and found himself in the kitchens. A jumble of Durasteel racks, ovens, and sinks, flanked by cupboards and storerooms. He concentrated, trying to feel for where people or arms might be hidden, and went instinctively toward a hinged door with a hand wheel on one side. He didn't sense a person, but he sensed something indefinably dangerous. "You have to remember to wear an earpiece," Chavu whispered through his voice projector, and pointed to the hand wheel, indicating, "Get over on that side," by stabbing his finger. Then he made a circling motion. "Turn the hand wheel." Ben held his lightsaber in his right hand and slowly wound the wheel with his left. The door hissed as a seal broke, and a mist of chilled air tumbled out into the warm kitchen. Chavu held up two fingers, then one, and jerked his fist down. 2, 1, go! Ben wrenched the door open, and Chavu aimed inside. It was pitch black, and the blaster's targeting spotlight punched into the darkness of a cold store, highlighting mist. Ben fumbled for the lights. Frost-rimed boxes, lined shelves, unidentifiable joints of meat hung from hooks. Nobody was hiding in there. Ben covered Chavu as he rummaged around in the cold store. The captain emerged with a long metal cylinder in one hand. His helmet was already iced over. "Know what this is?" he asked. Ben stared at the object. It was a tube. "Grenade launcher?" "Close. Shoulder launcher for small missiles. Part of one, anyway. There's about a dozen in there." "That shouldn't be on the menu." "Criffing right it shouldn't be." "Okay, let's go up one floor," Ben said. "That's your force sense talking, is it?" "Yeah." "Okay, works for me." The turbolift was tiny, and they huddled inside. Ben hated lifts. It was the moment when the doors opened that was worst. His force sense would tell him if there was a welcoming committee outside. But he still had a sick feeling in his stomach as the doors parted, and he saw into the lobby beyond for the first time. This time he was sure there were people around. He pointed to the left. Chavu darted down the passage and trained his blaster on the first door, gesturing Ben to stand to one side as he blew the lock panel. Then Ben sent a surge of energy ahead of him in a shock wave to flatten anyone inside. Like a stun grenade, it provided a few precious seconds to overpower an enemy, but it didn't leave them temporarily deaf and blinded. The two men inside, and Ben had spotted them only when he was well inside the room, scrambled up from the floor, and he lunged forward with his lightsaber. His reflexes took over. A blaster bolt shot past him. He thought it was from Chavu's weapon, and as he saw one of the men raise his arm, he brought the saber down in an arc. It felt like this skirmish was taking forever, but he knew somehow that it was seconds. Another bolt of white light flared, and he deflected it without thinking. Then there was silence. The air in the room smelled of burned fabric and rasped at his throat. He could feel his pulse pounding in his temples. "Well, they're about as dead as you can get." Chavu still held his blaster on the two men as he stared down at them. "Why'd you block my shot like that?"
"Didn't I?"
"You did."
"But you shot one."
"No, one of them fired at me." Ben looked at his hands as if they weren't his. He was holding the lightsaber two-handed as usual, and his grip was shaking. He'd killed both of the men. They both looked about Jason's age, and he didn't like what he saw.
"You okay?"
"Were they both armed?"
"Bit late to worry about that."
Chavu squatted down, laid his blaster beside him, and began searching the bodies. Ben heard pounding boots, and two GAG troops entered behind them.
"Well, one definitely was. Can't find a weapon on the other."
"Force forgive me.
I killed them. I killed a man who wasn't armed. I didn't even think.
Ben leaned against the wall and slid down it a little, bracing his legs. Around him, more GAG troops were running down passages checking rooms. He heard cupboards being wrenched apart and shouts of, "In here! Clear!" His head sank into his hands. He wanted to look, but he couldn't. Someone took his arm.
"Ben, get up."
It was Jason.
"I'm sorry."
"Ben, get a grip. You've got work to do." Jason pulled him upright gently but firmly. "Go on, look. You should have searched the bodies instead of leaving it to Shevu."
"He wasn't armed."
"Stop it. His body was, and the place is stuffed with rocket launchers and hardware." Jason steered Ben toward the two men on the floor and held him by both shoulders from behind to make him face them. Ben switched off. He felt a numbness spread through his mind, and all he saw was shapes. He didn't see people. He knew he would later, but right now something had cut in to cushion him from what he was seeing.
"You made the call, Ben."
Jason's voice was low. From the corner of his eye, Ben could see Shevu watching. Or at least he was facing in their direction, head turned as if he was focused on them.
"Mostly we get it right, but sometimes we don't. You got most of it right today. Maybe you got all of it right, but it might take us days to find out if that man was a threat or not. Either way, you can't afford to let it get to you."
He turned Ben toward the door, and one of the GAG troops took his arm and led him out into the passage. The noise outside was leaking into his awareness. He felt the force torn and twisted by a riot in progress. He'd started it. It was all his doing. He caught a snatch of conversation.
"He's a kid," Shavu's voice. "He's a boy."
"He's a Jedi, and he has to learn,"
Jason said. "He was already handling weapons at the same age you were learning to add."
Ben took a breath and surrendered himself to blind reflex again. By the time he got out onto the walkway, CSF officers were using snare rifles on parts of the crowd that wouldn't disperse, and the air was hazy with smoke. The thrum of assault ship drives made his back teeth vibrate. A CSF officer grabbed him and bundled him into one of the police personnel carriers. And he sat with his back against the bulkhead, silent and stunned, until a familiar face appeared in the hatchway with his visor pushed back.
"Hey, Ben,"
said Corporal LeCouf.
"You okay?"
"Kind of."
"It's never easy, kid."
"What isn't?"
"Killing someone."
"You need someone to talk to, I'm here. Anytime."
Ben knew he should get out of the carrier and get back to fighting. But a small, scared voice inside said that he was only a kid and it wasn't fair, and that he wanted his mom. He shook himself out of it. Mandalorian boys his own age would already be warriors. They'd spit on Ben for being such a baby. He pulled himself to his feet and scrambled out of the personnel carrier, stumbling back down the walkway as if wading through deep snow. At some point, and it was probably only moments later, Jason caught his arm and passed him to Shevu. They were pulling out. The black assault ship drew level with the walkway, and Shevu heaved Ben aboard. On the flight back to base, Ben sat sandwiched between Shevu and Jason, thinking that if they moved, he'd just collapse.
"It doesn't get any easier," Jason whispered. "The day it gets easy is the day you have to stop this business."
Ben found his voice somehow, and it didn't sound like his own. It echoed in his head.
"Will you teach me to shut down my presence in the Force, Jason?"
"Why?"
His instinct was that it would protect him one day. He also had another reason.
"So if I want Dad not to find me, I can?"
"You can't hide from your father every time you do something he doesn't approve of."
"I know, but I just want to be on my own sometimes. Really on my own."
Jason studied his face as if looking for something.
"You did okay today, Ben. You don't have to hide."
The last few weeks had been a constant series of cliff edges that Ben felt he had stepped from, and somehow he hadn't fallen. But they had changed him each time, and he had a sense of never being able to step back onto the cliff edge again. And today really had changed him. He knew it. He wanted his old self back, but he knew that the Ben he had once been was gone forever. He wanted to cry, but he was a soldier now, and he had to live with what he did.
"Dad must have gone through this, too. And Mom."
He wondered if he would ever be able to talk to them about it. He doubted it.